Today on Daring Dreams, I am absolutely thrilled to welcome Sonia Strobel. She is the co-founder and CEO of Skipper Otto, one of the world's very first community-supported fisheries. From starting with a bold idea back in 2008 and now leading one of the highest-ranking B Corp-certified seafood companies in the world, Sonia has created a movement that supports small-scale fishers, builds local food systems, and connects people to their food in a deeply meaningful way. If you guys are following me and following my purpose-driven work, she is a prime example of a true trailblazer. I'm so excited to dig in. Welcome, Sonia.
Thank you, Haley, so much for having me. It's great to be here.
I'm so pumped. When I saw your bio, I was very excited because I love to see people shaking things up. Because let's face it, the world needs a little bit of a shake-up sometimes.
It's true.
Let's kick this off by explaining to the listeners, what exactly does your company do? And then we'll kind of dig into some more specifics.
Sure. Thanks for that opening. Skipper Otto is a really innovative way for home cooks, regular folks like you and me, to get their seafood directly from Canadian fishing families. And so imagine if you lived right by the coast and you would love to be able to walk down the docks and get fish right off the boats. But we recognize that's not possible for most people. So Skipper Otto makes that really possible to do that, to really connect directly and personally and get your seafood to know exactly who caught it and where and when and how, and to know that it is sustainable.
Oh my gosh. I love that. And I live on the coast as well. I live on the Atlantic coast. Oh, yeah. So I would love that.
Great.
Okay. So let's kind of jump into what got you started in this line of business and creating the company the way you did.
Mm-hmm. Well, believe it or not, I don't come from a business background and I don't come from a seafood background at all. And how I found myself here is that I married a fisherman. I fell in love with a fisherman, I always say. And you know, up until that time, I didn't even really eat seafood. I was a high school English teacher, English and art, but I always really valued local food, and I bought my vegetables from vegetable CSAs, or, you know, where you can get a box of vegetables from your farmer. I shopped at farmers markets, things like that. But I didn't really love seafood, and it's because the seafood I'd had was your kind of run-of-the-mill generic seafood, which tends to, you know, it's not necessarily that tasty. And I didn't know much about seafood. Anyway, I married a fisherman, and I saw this incredible way of life, going out to sea, being part of the ecosystem. And it's more than a job. It really is a way of life. And yet, you know, there I was not being able to eat good local seafood and couldn't really understand why, you know, most of us growing up here in Vancouver, right next to the ocean, aren't eating local seafood. And so, and also saw that so many fishing families were getting out of fishing. It's such a difficult way of life. It's very uncertain. You take on a lot of risk financially, but also physically going out to sea.
Yeah.
Huge financial risks and really not knowing what your market will be for your catch or how much you'll catch or anything. And I thought there's got to be a better way. So I just did it. You know, I was on a maternity leave with my first son. And, you know, for any of your listeners who have had children, you'll know that before you have a child, you think maternity leave, that'll be great. I'll have loads of time. And then you have a baby.
Or I don't need that. It's fine. Yeah. Yeah, you do.
You do. But anyway, you just do and you figure it out. And I did. So I made this little website and just started a business with really no business plan, no great idea where we were going. But, you know, it took off. And where we are now, almost 18 years later, that baby is 18 years old. You know,
I have
grown a family while I've grown a business. And that my oldest son is an active commercial fisherman, fishes with his dad. Wow. Skipper Otto, the name, is my father-in-law. And he's retired from fishing, but he's still very proud of the work that we do. And we're now a collective of about 45 fishing families, not just here in BC, but also in Nunavut and in northern Saskatchewan. And we provide seafood to around 8,000 home cook families across Canada.
Oh, my word. So is it like a membership for like if I wanted to, I mean, I don't live in those areas, but it because you have to kind of live in those areas, I would assume, to be a member?
Yeah, We deliver as far as much of Canada as from Victoria to Montreal. So you're on the East Coast. You haven't reached the East Coast yet. And that's in part because I really want to welcome aboard East Coast fishing families to do
future.
That. But It's coming. So,
yeah. Okay. Anyway, and so
you can join. And essentially the way it works is, yeah, it is a bit like a membership, but it's really a simple one. So you decide how much fish you're going to eat this year. Maybe it's just $100 worth of fish. Maybe it's $500 worth of fish. And you put that in almost like a gift card. You've put your money in. That okay. means that we can guarantee our fishing families a market for their catch. We know how much fish to catch. And then throughout the year, you can pick and choose whatever you want. So it's not like a mystery box of fish. You can log in whenever you want, say, oh, look, I see that Sean caught salmon this week and I'll take a piece of that and maybe I'll take some spot prawns and a piece of halibut. You put it in your cart, you check out, the dollar value comes off of your prepaid credit and then we ship it either to your a pickup location near you or directly to your home.
Oh my word. That's so you made up that process system kind of on your own.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so impressive. I love that. And so how many people does it take to keep this going? Are you a solopreneur or do you have like other people?
Yeah, we have a staff of about 20 people and about 10 of those are full-time permanent and another 10 are more casual staff who work doing things like driving vehicles, packing orders, that kind of thing. So we have a staff of about 20 and then a 45 fishing families. And then we use contractors as well. So we have a lot of other folks supporting us.
Oh my gosh. I love the innovation. That's really cool. Okay. So what has been like, it was a whole new idea, obviously, back in 2008. That's when my daughter was born as well. She's graduating this year. You must have a graduate this year too.
Same thing. Yes. Congratulations. Yes.
Thank you. So how did you bring this? Because it's new. So how did you market this and like get the families on board and get the your first members, like when you first started?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the very first year that we did this, I looked around to see, I figured somebody must be doing this already, you know, so I went on the internet and I looked up community supported fisheries. That must be a thing. And couldn't find anyone doing it. But of course, there were lots of farmers doing community-supported agriculture. Mm-hmm. So I looked to those programs and I reached out to an organization here in BC called Farm Folk City Folk. And it helps farmers who are trying to market their own produce. And I reached out and said, do you know anyone doing this with seafood? They said, no, never heard of it. But if you hear of anyone, let me know. I said, well, I think I might try it. And they were super helpful. And just in terms of that initial brainstorm about how I might do this. And then I just did it. And they sent it out to their first, newsletter. They said, hey, if you like community-supported agriculture, you might like community-supported fishery. Check out Skipperado. I made this website. Now, remember, it's 2008, so it was like text and a photograph. And it said,
it wasn't like an AI website you make in 3 minutes.
No, like I literally scanned a photo in a physical scanner and put it on there. And, you know, like it was very rudimentary. But and the proposition was really just mail us a check and we'll get you some fish. And I couldn't believe that that year, 40 people mailed us a check for each $250. And I was just like, wow, I guess, wow, but people trusted us. We better make it worth their while. You know, and we did. We worked really hard, but we were really making it up as we went along. I remember that first fish pickup. I hadn't even thought about how people would get their fish home. We had whole fresh salmon off the boat. And I thought, oh, gosh, maybe I should get some bags or something. You know, I was just like flying by the seat of my pants, making it up.
Yeah.
And I think that's really is one way to do business that's different, I think, from how a lot of people do business. A lot of people are like, well, I must write this full business plan and then I must get investors and you know, build the Cadillac model before I get it off the ground. But my way was, I mean, partly because I didn't know any different. I didn't have business training and I was just solving a problem in the moment that needed to be solved. Didn't even have an eye for this being a business. It was just a thing that needed to be done that made sense.
And were you still teaching at that time?
I was still teaching.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think that's really great. Okay. So what would you say has been the biggest struggle kind of over the last 18 years? Because there's a lot of people here listening who are new to business, but there's a lot that are kind of like reinventing what they're doing. Like, and I've been in business 8 years and there's a lot. There's a lot of different things that come up. Like for me, staffing was like a big struggle. But what was the big struggle for you?
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard one to think about one biggest struggle. I mean, I think it's just I often think about starting a business and to go back to this having kids, it is a lot like starting a family is starting a business. So for any of your listeners who have been through it or have friends who have having kids, it's very much like that. And I think when you first have a baby, if you've had a baby, you'll know that it's not easy, but it's actually not complicated also. Mm-hmm. Their needs are really obvious. It's right in front of your face. They have a poopy diaper. You need to change it. They are hungry. They need food. They are tired. They need help going to sleep. And it's relentless, right? It's right. Just around the clock, but you know what to do. It just comes to you. And I think starting a business is a bit like that. So it's not easy. It's exhausting, but it's clear what to do. But just like when you have kids, as a business grows, it's sometimes not so clear what part you need to do and what part they can do themselves or what somebody else can. So when you have a 2-year-old or a 4-year-old, they'll say, I don't need help getting dressed, mommy. I can do this myself. And it's true. They can do some of it themselves. And it's not that they don't need you. It's that you need to just be a little bit different and that there are other people in their lives doing different things. And it's the same with business. So I think one of the biggest challenges is figuring out when the business is ready for something different. And when it doesn't need you to do this thing the same way anymore. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges with parenting is not helicoptering, not micro-parenting, seeing when they're old enough for a little bit more of a challenge, letting them fall and bump their head and knowing that they're going to be okay, but that fall is part of it. And that, I think, is part of business too, is saying, maybe I don't have to write every member newsletter anymore. Maybe I could hire somebody to do that. And may not be perfect, or it may not be the way I would have done it. But if business is going to grow up, I can't hold on to every piece with a stranglehold. I have to make space for other people to do it. So that's, I think, the biggest challenge, but also the biggest reward of entrepreneurship and parenting is that recognizing that it grows and it begins to have a life of its own and creating space for it to do that.
That is such good advice, I guess, because I see that a lot. And like, I'm a little bit of a control freak when it comes to my business. And I've got some clients who they're just on the cusp, right? And it's like, they are still hanging on for dear life to every single thing. And it's really hard to, because nobody's going to care about your business as much as you. So it's so hard to let go. So how were you able to kind of loosen your grip a little bit so that you could think
one of the core foundational things about how I operate business, but actually my whole life, is relationships first, people first. And so for me, that is marketing. That is business development, business growth. All of those things come out of deep, personal, meaningful relationships. And so that starts out with fishing families. So trusting our fishing families, having open communication, treating them with dignity and respect, asking them what's a living wage and making sure, like sitting down together and saying, well, what does your ice cost and what does your offload cost? Let's make sure this is a living wage. So there's that like humanity piece with our fishing families. But I think the same thing goes, I know the same thing goes with staff too. And that's seeing them as people first who are doing the best they can with what they've got. All of us are doing the best we can with what we've got. And so coming to folks with compassion, seeing how do I create a job that is a good job for you and one that makes sense, not just chunking together a whole bunch of tasks that don't make sense and then clawing back control when you don't do it the way I want it. You know, building systems and structures to support staff, really good systems of two-way communication so that, you know, I'm not happy with how something is going. I have a healthy way to share that and they have a healthy way to share back and learn. So I think it all comes down to relationships and trust. Mm-hmm. And understanding that nothing is a zero-sum game. Nothing is if you win, I lose. Everything is if I win, you win, right? Wow. So if we're going to work together on this company, you're going to hopefully get a great job and you're going to have we're a certified living wage employer, which I'm super proud of. We're going to make sure everybody has a really good job and good pay. And that's going to help me and my vision and my company, and staying in my lane is going to help you, right? So just recognizing that we're all in this together, I think it's all about relationships.
Yeah. And marketing too is all about relationships, as you said, and business growth. So let's kind of move to that end of the conversation. What would you say is like the number one thing that you guys have done from a marketing perspective that has allowed you to fuel the growth, even outside of your initial fishing families?
I think that it is the number one thing is that what we do, you know, the industrial seafood system is really good at breaking relationships apart. You know, if you just go to the grocery store and you buy a shrink wrap piece of fish and you don't know who caught it or where or when or how, all kinds of funny business can be going on behind the scenes there, right? For right. profit. But if you really are connected to the person who caught that fish, you're inherently going to have better quality fish. You're going to have better customer retention. You know, we have about year over year, 80% member retention. That's unheard of in the food business to have people come back at that kind of rate. And I think that comes down to relationship and connection. So we do little things like I've got one of our labels here. The labels with the seafood come with the face of the person who caught it and their bio, their story about where and when and how this fish was caught by this person on this day in this place using this gear.
Wow.
That's really important to us that you look into the eyes of the person who caught it when you take it out of your freezer or your fridge to eat it. And it goes both ways. So for our fishing families, the holidays, we do a Secret Santa letter writing campaign where we ask each of our members, we connect them to one of our fishing families, and we ask them to write a letter, make a video, send some photos saying how much it meant to them to have that seafood. And then each of our fishing families, they get a stack of letters and videos from people in Winnipeg and in Fort St. John and in Montreal saying how much it meant to them. And then as a result, our fishing families, they know that people care and then they care more. You're going to handle each fish a little differently when you actually saw the face of Mary and Steve in Winnipeg who care so much about your fish. So for me, that's what it's all about these relationships.
That's like making me emotional. The reason it's making me emotional today is I'm really struggling right now with marketing as a whole. The founder of Marketing on Purpose, just because it's so not about relationships anymore. It's like the social media and the short form reels. And that's why I love the podcast, because the podcast allows you to build trust, allows you to like have real conversations, and to see a company that's totally embracing relationship as their primary marketing strategy and like real relationship, not just relationship marketing. I'm going to send out this random email and I'm going to, you know, talk to my community and I really don't care what they think. It's real. And I really appreciate this conversation in this moment for me.
That's great. Thank you. It's so important. And I hear you. I think it's the antidote we all need right now, because the world, especially like with AI and everything too, it is increasingly impersonal. It's increasingly manufactured and detached and disconnected and phony and fake genuine, you know, because anybody can now generate a blog post or a LinkedIn post or something that sounds like it's from the heart. But we all know it's just blah, blah, blah. It's just generate, you know, it's not real relationship. And I find that exhausting and it doesn't fill my bucket. Yeah. Life is too short to do the things that don't fill my bucket. If I'm going to be on this planet and breathe this earth, this air, like I need to be doing something meaningful and I need to feel like I have contributed. I'd made people's lives better, not worse. And so for me, I find that treadmill exhausting of, you know, short reels and that kind of thing. So you're right. You're absolutely right. We purposefully built a company that is built around meaningful personal relationships. And I'm interested in how we build those. That's why I'm not interested in selling a one-off piece of fish here or there.
Yes.
Because I can't tell you the story. I can't do justice to it on just a label. But if I have your membership for a whole year, you're a member of this, then all through the year, you're getting those stories. You know, if there is a federal policy that is disproportionately disadvantaging small-scale fishers, we go to bat for fishers and we write petitions. And I've been invited many times to the House of Commons to speak about policies and how they're affecting communities. And we've seen real government change. To me, this is more than marketing. It's more than a company. This is democracy. This is how democracies function, is that people understand, know one another deeply in actual relationship. And then they stand up when they see something's not right. So to me, that's very different from a quick, you know, reel that is just designed to sell fish. This is about social change. It's about food systems. It's about justice. It's not just about selling fish.
Can I stand up and give you a standing ovation right now? Like, I don't even know. That actually warms my heart so much. I love when I find companies and people like you who are, you know, keeping my industry to fill my bucket. Because I'm like, this is my everyday, is this marketing, right? And it's just going in a direction that I don't love. And this is why I do this podcast. This is exactly why. Okay. So.
Well, and I love that you do this podcast, but I love that too, because when I'm talking to you, I know that out there, there are people listening who are asking these same kinds of questions. And if by us having conversations together with them, we can lift one another up to do more good work, that's how we make a better world, you know, not by siloing in our own little silent thing and trying to eke out a living. It's by saying, yeah, you know what? There are other ways. And I heard this person doing it this way. I heard this person doing it that way. That's what's going to make real change. So congratulations to you for doing this podcast. It's really important.
Thank you. Thank you. My next question is, what trends or changes are you excited about in this industry of sustainable food? Like, how has the industry kind of evolved? Because you've been in it for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it continues to evolve. You know, I think 18 years ago, people were starting to think about, you know, things like the 100-mile diet, like, where is my food coming from? But they weren't thinking about seafood. And seafood has really always been a bit of a laggard. When people think about food systems, they forget that the ocean is this abundant source of incredible nutrients for us that is sustainable, that has the potential to feed the world. So I think that we've come a long way. People are beginning to ask questions about seafood. You know, seafood is one of the most egregious food systems channels out there in terms of global, you know, exploitation of ecosystems and exploitation of people. People are beginning to pay attention to that and ask these questions. So I think that's great. I think if people are not just blindly eating whatever seafood they see, that's great start there. And I think in this time in particular, in this year, you know, with the tariffs, the sort of tariff wars all around us, and, you know, people are thinking a lot about import and export. And I think most people don't know this, but of the seafood that we catch in Canada, we export 90% of it.
90%. What?
Yeah. And at the same time, that's not just because we have so much of it. It's because also what we're eating is 80% imported. So we have the potential to feed ourselves with the seafood that we catch in this country, which incidentally comes from some of the most conservatively managed fisheries in some of the cleanest water in the world with, you know, human rights regulations and things like that. And yet we export it. And what are we getting? We're getting mystery fish. We know about well-documented slavery. We know about documented just destruction of the seafloor in some of these global industrial fisheries. We could be feeding ourselves. So I think in this day and age where we're thinking about export and import and tariffs, there's a motivation to say, hold on just a second. Could we be building a better system? Could we be breaking down interprovincial trade barriers? Could we be building more infrastructure in fishing communities to help ensure that we can fillet fish and smoke it and freeze it instead of shipping it to China for processing and sometimes shipping it back. So
that's
I'm really excited
shocking.
About that.
It is shocking. That is such a surprise to me. I guess because I live in like fishing type community, right? And so a lot of it is local here, Atlantic. Obviously, a lot of it is not. And I had no idea. So that's like, I'm thinking of maybe the frozen boxes, like the, you know, that are battered and like all of the potentially would not be, I guess.
Yeah. And actually, we have some of the weakest labeling laws for seafood in Canada from other G7 nations. In Canada, you don't have to put the country of origin where it was caught. You don't have to put the Latin name so that you can use all sorts of common names that might be a bit misleading.
Okay.
You don't have to say how it was caught. You don't have to say when it was caught. You don't have to say any of those things. Whereas in the US and in Japan and in the EU, the labeling laws are much more strict. So when you go into the grocery store, next time you're there, take a look at a fish label and see what it says. sometimes it will say things like product of Canada. And as a lot of folks are paying attention to now, product of Canada just means that its last major transformation happened in Canada.
Yeah.
So if it was cut here and packaged, they can say product of Canada, but it could be from anywhere.
That's shocking. I love that you are, you know, an advocate for this. And also, now, do you share this kind of information on your social channels and with your members? And
Yeah, we do, definitely. So, you know, obviously communication's a little different on your social channels from direct with your members. But this is why membership is so important, is that our members are more open to that long form communication. Mm. And so I'll write longer blog posts. I'll put a snip of it in our member newsletter, linking back to the blog for people who want to dig a little deeper and understand it. A lot of people just want to know that we're fighting the good fight and they're so busy they don't have time to read the whole thing. But they do appreciate knowing that I've gone to the House of Commons again to talk about labeling laws. You know, they want to know that we're making incremental change and that their membership, we always say that Skipperado is that you can, you know, eat well and do good. You're eating good fish. And just by eating good fish, you're actually doing good in the world as well. But you can't say that and not have any meat to that. So I'm really proud that if you go to our website, or you go into our blogs or anything like that, you know, we've got to face members. We've got to meet them where they are. They want to know how they can buy fish. Let's make sure they get that information right away. But let's also make sure that if they say, wait a second, is that sustainable? And they double click literally on that, it's going to take them to a very robust explanation of what is sustainability or living wage or any of our B Corp contents. To me, you know, as I'm a discerning consumer, if I go to a website that's selling, I don't know, you name it, t-shirts, and they say that they're sustainable, I'm going to be a little skeptical about greenwashing. And so I'm going to want to dig a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And see, well, what do they mean? Do they know what they're talking about? And if I click down a little bit and it's really superficial, I've lost trust with that company. So for me, it's been super important that, yes, we have to have beautiful pictures of fish and we have to make it easy for people to find, to put it in your cart and check out. Yes, we have to do those things, but it can't be superficial. Underneath that has to be really deep and robust.
Right. I love that. So definitely purpose-driven company. So what would you say, I know you started this business when you were a teacher and a mom. And what would you say, though, has been the way, like, it's a big jump, I guess, to go from teacher with pension, with, you know, stability, what you study for, to this. And I know that there's a lot of listeners who want to make a big chapter change in their life, right? I mean, I did it. I mean, I'm still doing marketing, but like cutting the golden handcuffs off because I used to work for corporate companies. So how did you do it? How did you dare to dream and do it?
Yeah, this is a very good question. And it's, in hindsight, you know, it looks simpler than it was in the time. You know, when you're in the moment looking forward into the mystery, it's scarier. Looking back, it seems not so scary. But, you know, I didn't do it alone, I will say that. So I always sought out mentorship right from the beginning, is let me talk to other people who have done this and hear from them. And I was lucky enough to be in a social purpose accelerator program back when I was still teaching. And it was there with my mentors that I was able to explain the situation. Like, here I am and I'm teaching. And yes, I've shifted myself to teaching, you know, night school so that I can work in the day, certain days. But I was so afraid to let go of, as you say, those golden handcuffs that everyone would say, wow, you've got a degree, you've got a pension, you've got summers off, why would you give that up? But for entrepreneurs, you'll understand that itch, that yearning to do something that is your call to
build, create.
It really was so meaningful. And one of my mentors said to me at that point, well, you've got to the point of breaking point. You are working way more hours than is reasonable. You have a small child and another one on the way. You're going to burn out. You can't do both. And so if you gave up, just imagine a world where you gave up the business and you let it go and you teach and somebody else picks up that idea and runs with it. How would you feel? And I was like, absolutely not. I knew with every cell of my being that I could not give that up. I just let somebody else run with it. No, I could not. And so that gave me a really clear answer. I'm going to have to find a way, and I'm going to have to find the bravery to kind of jump into the unknown, but not foolishly.
Yeah.
You know, still got my teaching license. I could go back if I'm if worst comes to worst and this doesn't work out. I've got that to fall back on. And as far as knowing when the right time was, one of my mentors was really helpful, and he helped build out a financial projection. and said, okay, let's build out what you think will happen this year. And what would happen if you paid yourself and replaced your teacher salary? If you actually, and I wasn't doing that at that point, it was terrifying. Yeah. But he said, look, let's just pop that into the financial model. If you have this many members and you sell this much fish and you pay yourself this, look, you'll be okay. So why not run it for 6 months and see if it's working? And if it's not, it's okay. We can pivot. And that gave me the confidence to do it. So I say it's not just a simple answer like just be brave and go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. Don't be foolhardy, obviously, especially if in my position, you know, I've got kids, I've got people depending on me. Yeah. I'm not living in my parents' basement eating ramen noodles, you know, like I've got
bills. Nor do you want to be.
Nor do I want to be. But I think it's being a little bit of both, being realistic, getting the help. So many entrepreneurs, and I have a mentorship program and I mentor 4 businesses a year who are in small scale community seafood. And one of the chief things that we do right out of the gate is let's look at your numbers and let's not be afraid to look at numbers. And let's build a real projection that is not a fantasy. It's not just plucked out of thin air. And when we build that and we have trust and confidence in that, then let's be bold and brave and go with it.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that did come with me from corporate when I was in corporate was always know your numbers. Always know your numbers. Understand your numbers. Like forecasts and like numbers are important. And I know a lot of small business owners don't even look at their numbers. Like
because
for months.
They're scary. Like I think a lot of entrepreneurs, if you're like me, that is not my strength. But you can't make it go away by ignoring it. Right. Yeah. And so don't be scared. Find a mentor. Find somebody who can sit you down and turn it into plain language and just know that it is something you have to do, but you don't have to do it forever. You know, I have great people who are great at the numbers who I trust.
Yeah.
And I get reports from them so that I can be confident that we're going in the direction we think. But I don't need to micromanage the numbers anymore. Yeah. But I did need to do them at the beginning so that I would understand them.
Also, when you get those reports, even if they're not what you want, you can then pivot. You can then do something about it. Whereas with your head in the sand, it's just a nightmare because you're constantly worried, right?
That's right. And then you can't sleep at night. When people say, what keeps you up at night? I say, nothing keeps me up at night. I sleep well. And I think we should all strive for good sleep. And we can sleep when we have put things on paper and when we have asked for help and we have a plan. At the end of the day, we can say, okay, there's no more I can do tonight. I can pick this up tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, one more question. And it's about B Corp. So tell me, like, what made you decide? I know you're purpose driven, so I'm not surprised that you're B Corp, but it is a lot of work to become B Corp, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So what made you decide to do it? And what was that journey like for you? Just for anybody else who might be interested in doing it.
Yeah, I thought about doing B Corp from the beginning because I knew that the business was a social purpose business. I knew that we were having this impact. And every time I would look at it, I'd become overwhelmed. The process was big and I needed help. And I am not the spreadsheet detail-oriented line-by-line person. And I just would become overwhelmed and I don't know how to do this. But as we got bigger and as we got a team and I had staff who were doing things like data and, you know, IT and things like that, I grew a team where I knew that we had the capacity to do it if we worked together. And it was important to me because even though I know that we have this impact, and we talked about this a bit before, it's really important that I have the depth and the robustness, not just trust me, we're doing good, but here, someone else has audited us and proven that we are doing the good that we think we're doing. And also there was a part of me that always said, well, I know I have these certain impacts, but these ones over here, I think I have, but I really don't know how you would measure that.
Right.
And so B Corp is so good at helping you figure out how to measure some of the intangibles. And so we used a great consulting group called Decade. You can look them up if you're thinking about it. They were so helpful taking on that the whole project managing it with us, and then giving us examples of how you might measure different things. And so without their help, I think I would have continued to be overwhelmed. But with our own team and with their help, not only did we get our certification, we scored a really high score in our very first one, and we're super proud of. And we know that as we continue to recertify, I now know there are areas where we could have more impact. And that's super exciting to me, things I never even thought of. And so we continue to be able to steer the company towards more impact, not just steering the company towards more profit, but okay, well, if we're purpose driven, then what else could we be doing? What are we close to being able to do? So that's really exciting.
I love that. I love it. Purpose over profits. Beautiful.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Do you have anything you would like to add?
I'm going to add a thing and then you can use it or not. But I want to add something about, I've been thinking a lot about business growth and being purpose-built businesses. And yes, of course, we also want to make a living. We also want to make profits. Profits are not a bad thing. We need to do that to keep our lives going, to keep the businesses going. And so I've been thinking a lot about how you decide how much is enough. And a lot of business accelerators out there are built on this model, I think, which is you've got to just blow this thing up. You know, we need to 10x it right now. We need to get investor money and we've got to blow it up. And what that feels like for anybody who's doing that is it feels like chaos, right? Yeah. It's like you're building this house of cards and you're just hoping that it doesn't collapse under its weight and doing that as fast as you can so that you can sell it. Mm. And that doesn't light me up. It doesn't. And I think that it's not that either you have a tiny solopreneurship where you're also burning yourself out or you do that scale and sell and exit. And then, I don't know, what do you do then? Consulting and speaking and write a book. Like there are different ways. And so, as I mentioned, I do a mentorship program and was thinking, my business partner and I were thinking about how the purpose of our mentorship program is not let's blow this thing up as fast as we can to sell it. The purpose of this is let's build a sustainable business with a sustainable life for you and all your employees. Let's really think about what kind of life do you want to live and make sure that we can get you there in a way that's sustainable. And so sometimes you'll hear in business communities, it's a kind of like disparaging, like, that's cute. It's a lifestyle business. And it's a little bit disparaging. And I want to call that out and say, no, actually, I think that if all of us strive for a sustainable life, one where we have enough, where we don't need excessive riches. We don't need to be billionaires. What if we strive to build a life where we're comfortable, where we're happy, where we're fulfilled and we're thriving and we've created those kinds of jobs for other people? That would be a really different world.
I talk about that a lot with my own clients in terms of what's your vision? If your vision is to sell it off someday, that's great, but that's not everybody's vision. Some people want to just love their life, right? Which means maybe their vision is I'm literally working part-time. That could be somebody's vision, right? Or and that quite frankly is part of mine, right? I just want to love my life, love people in my life. I don't want Marketing on Purpose to be a multi-million dollar business because that's not, I've done the big marketing in the corporate and I like it this way. I want contribution, right? But I think that's a really good conversation because you're right. All the accelerators, or most of them, not, I can't say all of them, a lot of them are like, how are we going to get you to the point where you can sell it? And
that's
when
it's
your baby and it's filling your bucket, then why would you want to sell it?
Exactly. And that's the thing. I'm at a stage in the company where I can work in the company a couple of days a week. I can do the work of overseeing the business on that high level on just a couple of days a week. And I can use the rest of my time for impact. So I can choose whether I'm going to go to the House of Commons to speak on this topic. I'm going to advocate for this change. I do these things because I've built an incredible team of people who are so good at their work. And I want to give them the space to do their incredible work and stay in my lane, figure out what am I the best at and what's the best way for me to participate in this business. And when it doesn't need me to be spinning my wheels 5 days a week in the weeds, then it's recognizing to step out. And back to that parenting metaphor we talked about at the beginning, is that when your kid can drive a car and go to college and they need you still, they need you in yet another way, and they don't need you to be 24/7 in the weeds of what they're doing.
Exactly.
And that's where my company is at 17 and a half, 18 years, is that it needs me, but it needs me in a very specific kind of way. And it means that I get to have more space and my team get to have the leadership, the authority, the agency to do great work.
And the fulfillment of doing that great work. It's not very fulfilling when there's somebody looking over your head all the time who doesn't trust you, right?
That's right. Exactly. That's not fulfilling for anybody, but for them to, the team to come to our quarterly marketing meeting and to bring all of great stories of what they've done based on what we talked about at the last quarterly meeting. They can feel so proud. I feel so proud of them. And together we can craft next year's strategy, and then they can run with it and execute it. They don't need me. In fact, they need me not to be in the weeds on that.
Yeah. And don't be in the way.
Get in their way. Right. Get out of the way. Let them do what they're good at. If you trust them and they trust you, let them do it.
And I think that it does come down to, though, you need to hire the right people. And I know that, and if you can think back to even like a decade ago, maybe for you, it was hard to, and at least I know, like for me, for a lot of people who are, you know, 8 years in, it is hard to find the right people because you have to pay them a certain amount for the right people, or you have to invest a lot of time in them so that they can be trained up to be, have the skills to be the right people. And so there's this like weird stage that it's really hard to get over. But once you get over it, it sounds like it's really nice on the other side.
It is beautiful. It is on the other side. And you're right. There's that tricky part. I remember in those earlier years, and we would take all kinds of like student employment grants. And then it was like, well, we have to hire somebody who's going back to school full time, and we can only have them for 3 months. And then, you know, and it felt tantalizing because it was going to be help with their wages, but it came at a cost, which is, you know, you were training somebody and then, you know, they're going to leave and you have to start over. Not to say those are bad things. I think it's great to take advantage of those at a certain time and place in business. But remembering that the goal to get to is the point where you can pay competitive wages and therefore you can attract great people. And if you're building a business that is a strong business, it will be able to do that. And so it's figuring out when it's ready to hive something off of your plate and hire somebody. The goal is that you hire people who are better than you at everything. That's the goal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And there's, I think, a certain, pardon me, like insecurity that comes with that stage too, where we sort of go, wait a second, if I have all these people who are better than me at all these things, what do I do? And I think some entrepreneurs cling to certain things out of fear of their self-worth or their identity being tied up in that. And so I think examining that and recognizing that your identity is not writing your newsletters or doing your books, that isn't who you are. And that if you can have people who are better than that, better than you at that, that's wonderful. Then you can do the things that you're really good at, which in my case, that stuff is vision. It's the kind of direction, it's the networks, it's bringing opportunities to the company, it's advocating for big systems change, inspiring and delighting and getting, you know, people on board. That is actually my job. And that was a delightful thing to realize, that my job wasn't bagging fish.
That would be delightful. I mean, do what makes you shine and makes the company shine, right? And then you can hire people to do the other stuff. I love, I'm glad that you mentioned that. That's a good, definitely a good and relevant topic, especially for the listeners. So yeah, you don't decide what you want for your future and work towards that. Don't let somebody else decide.
Don't let somebody else decide, and recognize when you're there. And I think too many people don't even recognize when they've gotten to a really great place because there's this kind of social pressure to grow at all costs. And when is enough?
Yeah. Well, that's like, you need to dig into yourself and figure out when is enough, right? Yeah. It's hard. I mean, it's hard to know what to do. I'm just thinking back to different clients at different stages and stuff. And it's really hard to know when it's enough. And then I even have clients who they're operationally not ready, but they're still push, right? And so it's sometimes you just got to slow down.
Yes. And that's really hard to do when you're on that startup treadmill and there's all this pressure to push. And it's hard to find the space and the time to take even a breath and slow down and ask yourself, what am I doing here?
And I know too, and I love the government programs. Don't get me wrong. Canada is very lucky. We have lots of opportunities for businesses to get funds, money, help, you know, but there is a lot of programs that are like, how many people, I'll give you this money, but how many people is that going to allow you to hire? Right. And in the infancy of businesses, when, you know, they shouldn't be thinking to hire yet, I think that there's a cart before the horse kind of thing with some of the funding that is available. So that just reminded me that I wanted to talk about that in a different show. But there's, because we want to fit into the box that's going to allow us to get some funding to help us, right? And then you might end up doing something too soon or that you didn't want to do just to get that specific grant or whatever.
Yeah. Unfortunately. I definitely was guilty of that in the early days, chasing the shiny object, because it seemed like, well, there's this grant, and if I do this project, I can get that grant. And it was the tail wagging the dog, you know, instead of saying, no, this is what I'm trying to build. What do I actually need to build this thing? That's nice, yeah, but that's not the core of what I'm doing. And that can be hard. All of it takes awareness and humility, right?
Yeah. 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 It's hard. But obviously, we love it. Yeah. It's hard, but fulfilling and really great. Okay. Well, my dear, thank you so much for the awesome conversation and for reminding me that there are companies out there that are really doing marketing in the way that I fulfills my bucket, I guess. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. It means a lot to me. And I hope that, you know, you and your listeners will keep in touch. You can find us, skipperotter.com. If you're interested in getting a little seafood, we'd be happy to get it to folks. Are you in Halifax or where are you?
I'm in St. John or by St. John.
Oh, you're Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, we're not there yet, but we're coming. We're coming. So keep an eye on us.
I think the Fisher families here would love that. So yeah, we'll put it in the show notes, everybody. If you want to get in touch with Sonia, if you're in one of her service areas, if you want to, you know, become a member, learn more, I think you should. I will when it comes here.
Great. Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.